All right. Yep. Only the hard questions tonight. No softballs. I think there were a couple that last time were like, hey, you know, I didn't want to ask a question because I thought it might be too personal. I wouldn't fly anywhere else, but that maybe could like conceivably fly somewhere else. But this is my family, so I'm not sure that that works.
I'll start simple. When you went to college, knowing what kind of school the majority of the people there and their faith, and that you were going to take courses on the Bible, did you go with a guard up, you know, Muslim shield, or did you go in open-minded? Because I know you said that, sure, I want to study your Bible. Mm. I can find some problems in it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I was pretty open-minded, but more so from the standpoint of not worried. I wasn't worried about what it had to say, because if the people were a reflection at all of what the words were in the Bible, then there wasn't much to be worried about. And I didn't really know. I knew Florida College was a Christian school, but I had tried out at two other Christian schools before that, and received much better offers in Florida College. I don't know why I went to Florida College. Glad I did. I tell you what. But, you know, at the other schools, it was like, I mean, there weren't a lot of people that were really trying, I guess you could say. And at Florida College, for all of its faults, I think they're really trying. I think they're really trying to live godly lives, the people there. I didn't expect it to be quite like that. But I wasn't really worried, but mostly from the standpoint of, I just, again, the representation that I had seen in the world of what a Christian was like, you know, wasn't a big deal, I guess.
Right, you're talking about the hypocrisy and the billboards.
Right.
Next. So when you were at the festival, exploring the Bible and Christianity, how did your family, friends, about that?
Yeah. So the majority of my family, I think their big concern was, you know, hey, you're doing this for Sarah, you know, so that was annoying. and then my dad, we didn't talk for 6 months after I got baptized. I mean, he was very upset, very, very, very upset, and that was difficult. That was very difficult. My dad and I are close. We were very close and still are close. So that was not fun. But it was understandable. You know, God forbid if one of my kids, you know, were a Christian and they came to me and said, hey, I became, you know, a Muslim or anything else for that matter, I would be devastated. So I don't hold it against him. The question was, you talking about the last question?
I can't hear Adam's question. I'm sorry. What did he just ask?
Yeah, the last question was, he said you mentioned you have a great relationship with your dad. Now, do you have a great relationship with the rest of your family? My family, I would say my dad is the, like, for sure, the devout Muslim. Like, he is the one that's really, like, he's a godly man. The rest of my family, it's not that they're not, you know, good people, but they're you know, maybe not as strict in their observance of Islam than my dad is. So that being said, you know, they're kind of indifferent to the whole thing. I do think that Sarah and I have earned a lot of respect from my mom and especially from my dad because of the way that we live. And I think that as he saw the way that I lived after I became a Christian, I think that's what kind of brought us back into a mode of being able to be close again. Because I mean, again, think about it from this perspective. You know, my dad was seeing the same things, and y'all see it too. So you can You can have a level of empathy here, I think, that, that's really useful for you to think about. When you think about those who are out in the world that profess to be Christians and see the way that they live, I'm sure that upsets all of you. You know, if you're trying to do it right, you see other people who are saying that they're this, that, the other, but then they're not trying to do it right. Like, it's annoying, to say the least. But it's really bothersome. So I think that what my dad saw was when he heard that I became a Christian, I think that that's what he feared, was that's what I was going to be. And of course, that would be something to fear, and that would be something to be disappointed in. But as he saw over time that that wasn't exactly the case, I think that that kind of smoothed some things over and put him in a good place.
All right, last one.
Sure.
Growing up Muslim in the United States and Western civilization, after 9/11 and the perception of Muslims in Islam, how was that for you as a child, as a teenager, and did things change? You became a Christian in your adult life.
Mm-hmm.
Things change in your adult life, but you still deal with issues. Have things changed? Do you still get any of that just because of the way you look?
Sure.
Of course, if you walked up to me, I would, hey, you look like my cousins that live in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I did a podcast. I've been talking with Joe about it a little bit. I did a podcast recently on Facebook about racism in the church. And it's on Hal Hammond's website if you want to go listen to it. It's I think it's decent. We didn't get to go maybe into all that. He kind of guided the conversation. But so the first part of the question, I don't think before 9/11 anybody even knew that I was Muslim or Arabic. I don't think that anybody, like, it even crossed their mind. After 9/11, I remember the week of 9/11, I got in 3 fights. Two of them were one-on-one, and one of them was not. So I remember that distinctly because I think people became aware, like, oh, we don't like you, you know? And I was like, okay, you know, and then things went, you know, they come to your house and take your house, you go take your house back, right? So things kind of went that direction. So that wasn't a good start. And as that kind of died down, maybe from the more violent aspect, was there prejudice that remained? Definitely. You know, I said this on the podcast, I think that it was easier to maybe discern the difference between why people were being prejudicial toward me then, and, you know, maybe now not so much, because I think we're kind of pretty far removed. You know, we're 22 years removed from 9/11, so it's not so obvious. But do I, you know, there could be lots of reasons, and it's impossible to judge the hearts and minds of men. And I said this on the podcast. You know, are there people that might look at me or treat me a certain way just because I'm young? You know, maybe they just don't like young people. You know, maybe they don't like an interracial couple. Maybe. You know, maybe they don't like men. Maybe some people don't like young men. Maybe some people don't like Arabs. Like, it's impossible, and I said that on the podcast. I said it's not so obvious to me why people are racist or prejudicial. It's not so obvious. You know, some people might not like people for lots of different reasons. So I don't know currently maybe what the reasons are of why some people do the things that they do or say the things that they say. But, I mean, sometimes when it's directed, you know, like statements on Facebook as recent as, you know, in the last 24 months about, you know, all Muslims are terrorists and things like that. Yeah, I mean, that's not cool. But personally, any prejudice that I deal with, I don't want to say I don't make a big deal out of it. I mean, I don't. But I guess part of the reason why I don't make a big deal out of it is because I don't know the hearts and minds of men, and I don't want to. It's not my position. You know, that's for God. That's for God to do what he will with. So I try not, honestly, I don't think about it very much. I just, you know, assume that if I'm treated poorly, because it does happen, I just assume that maybe they would have treated you poorly too, because maybe they don't like people from Lafayette. You know, I just don't know. You know what I mean? So instead of me kind of being upset about it and letting that kind of dictate what I might do or the way I behave, and that's what I try and teach the kids at the college all the time, is that, Like, you just don't, and because this is a big, this has been, and I need to preach on it sometime soon, but this whole race thing has been a big thing for a few years now, and again, to me, it's just not so obvious why people are behaving the way that they are, and I think that we can get caught up spending way more time and energy and being upset about that and trying to figure that out, and instead of just, like, go do what you need to do, you know, and who cares what people think. So I've not thought about it in quite some time, but definitely in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, for sure. You know, that wasn't cool, and I definitely think at Florida College. Well, I know at Florida College. I mean, some things were written on my car, and you know, I mean, there were some things that happened that were not okay. But you know, that was 2000. When did I start there? I started there in 2009, so it's been a decade or so. Good questions.
Sure. That were pagans, if you would, because that's what they were. They weren't Muslims, they weren't anything, but they were pagans.
Right.
And it was the old man, woman, and child. It's hard for a lot of Christians to wrap their mind around. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around.
Sure.
That was God's plan.
Mm-hmm.
And to protect a pure race that was his pure people. So is that part that we, you know, we study as Christians, if we study the Old Testament, is that going to be a problem when we, if we study with
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good point, and I think that there are a couple problems that we need to be prepared to address to anybody, and that's certainly one of them. You know, why this, why that, why that? That you could lump that into the category of, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? Why does God allow evil in the world? Why does he allow genocide, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that that's one of those that we need to be prepared to deal with. Now, as it relates specifically to Muslims, it's definitely something that they will point to and say, you know, you're really critical of our book, but your book isn't so clean either. You know, and then we have to go explaining away this and this and that. And I heard this, and I was talking to Madison about this morning. And once we explain away, and I guess to put it really simply, Christ did not, like, that wasn't the teaching of Christ, let's say, under the total fulfillment of God's plan. So let's say that was a suitable answer, even though that's very shallow right now, but let's just say that was a suitable answer for a Muslim. I heard a Muslim apologist say, okay, but your New Testament says that Jesus is going to come back and he's going to reign and dominate over people for 1,000 years. So premillennialism. And Madison and I were talking about the danger of this type of thinking and this type of teaching. But I think that it's actually really common for definitely Christians in the world, and you know, your casual Christian, your denominational Christian, to believe in premillennialism. So you have, those are the people that are talking to the Muslims oftentimes, and so the Muslim is saying, okay, well, Jesus didn't dominate anybody when he was here, but he's going to. He's going to come back and he's going to do it. So what's the difference between what we did and what your Bible is teaching, what your New Testament is teaching? Forget the Old Testament. So I actually think that, and again, it's funny that you asked that question because we were talking about this. We need to study premillennialism. We need to know how to deal with that. And I can tell you right now, I know for certain that there have been people in the Lord's church that don't understand it and that believe it. This is why they, quote, stand with Israel. Because they think that a lot of the things that are said are physically going to come to pass the way that they read it. And they don't understand the difference between what has happened already, how, I remember the Muslim apologist said, you know, Christ is going to come back and crush Satan's head. You know, and it's like, he's already done that, pal. He's already defeated death. It's done. Like, the war is over. There is no war. If anything, it's a war for us to try and live up to God's standard. But if you want to talk about war, that's about the extent of it. God's already won. We already know how the end of the movie ends. But that's not what, definitely not what the prevailing view is of Christians in general. But again, I'm not so convinced. I don't know how many Christians in the Lord's Church believe in premillennialism, but I think that there are definitely some. Well, I know that there are definitely some, and that's a problem. It's a good question. Yes?
Where does the Sharia law enter into all of this? Is it even part of the Muslim and the Islam? Or?
Yeah. So the Hadith is the... We talked about holy books last time briefly, and we said that, you know, that we have the Bible, and then the Muslims have the Quran, but they also have something called the Hadith. And the Hadith is the daily sayings of Muhammad and his life. So in other words, imagine Muhammad had his followers, his crew of close followers that would be with him, that would go place to place with him, hear things that he said, watch things that he do, and they would record it. And they recorded all these things in a book called the Hadith. And the Hadith is not the inspired word of God. So the prevailing view of Muslims is that it is not inspired. It's just simply, but they value it because they're words from their prophet. So they do value it, they just don't value it at the level of the word of God. Now there are those that pervert that and take that to this, that, the other. Definitely. Definitely. And I think that Sharia law, not all of Sharia law is a perversion of everything. There's actually some things, you know, one thing that I find really interesting about Sharia law is that in cases of divorce, the women actually get more than in many cases that they would in the United States. So it's actually kind of, you know, there's all kinds of things that are hidden beneath the surface of what we're told versus what the reality or the full extent of what something is. But yeah, there are some things that are, I mean, you know, eye for an eye is a thing. Don't steal in Saudi Arabia. You know, don't steal anywhere. But definitely not in Saudi Arabia if you want to keep your fingers and stuff. So, she misses me. Yeah, she's, come on up, girl. There is that exists. I think there was one here, and then I'll come to you, Tommy. Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. If he is, then it's true. So, of course not.
So, anything that you read tonight, whether it is soft or hard to understand, is still not an inspired word that will prevent any Christian from being associated with Muslim.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not inspired. Supposedly, right? But it's not. I mean, there's lots of reasons for that. But yeah, I mean, it's man's teaching. It's man's teaching, and then there are those that have perverted man's teaching. So it's already, I wouldn't necessarily say a perversion in and of itself, because there's lots of teaching of man that are not a perversion. I think the perversion aspect of it is if they've changed, the areas where they've changed the faith. So obviously they've looked at, they say it's a continuation. It's a continuation of Judaism and Christianity and then Islam. So any areas where they've changed what Christ has taught is a perversion of the faith. So that's bad. And then anything outside of that is just a teaching of men. And that's that. It's really that shallow.
Mm-hmm. And Muhammad's cousin would be Shia, and they are almost opposed to one another in many ways. How is that reconciled in the Muslim community, not the radical?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's not really reconciled. It's
a lot.
Yeah, they do. They fight a lot. I think the reason why it's not a bigger deal than it is because those that the Shiites are a small group. That's not a big group. I think it's something around 88% to 10%, and then there's a 2% that's left over for other actual divisions. Really small, almost like nothing. But the Shiites are the biggest division, but they're only around 8% of the Muslim population. So they're not big enough to cause a big issue. It's all about who's the successor of Muhammad. Muhammad dies, and then Shiites believe that it should stay in the bloodline, his succession, and then the Sunnis believe that his closest confidant should be the one to continue carrying his tradition. So it's all just an argument over that. But yeah, they're at each other. They disagree vehemently on that issue. Good questions. Hey.
Our beliefs and our worship that include Christ considered idolatry to above them?
Yeah, I think that depending on who you're talking to, it could. They do not believe that Jesus. It's. I don't want to say it's complicated, but it is a little bit. So let me explain a couple things. The initial question is any worship of Christ considered idolatry because they don't believe that Jesus is God? So that's a really good question. That's a really good point. However, they do believe that Jesus was conceived miraculously. They do believe that Jesus performed miracles, even raising someone from the dead. They do believe that Jesus is the most highly regarded prophet. So it's not quite idolatry, and it's not quite paganism because they clearly align in several areas. But they obviously don't align at all with the fact that Jesus would be deity. So that's a problem for them. But I think that the majority view is, hey, we disagree on that. But here are the areas where we agree. Like, why do we hate each other? and in fact, I'll even go as far to say this. I think that there's a lot more agreement in Islam than there is in Judaism. And I'm happy to stay after and listen to an argument made for more similarities between Christianity and Judaism than in Christianity and Islam. I would be interested to hear that argument, but I've thought through that quite a bit. I think that there's a lot of symmetry between Christianity and Islam, and I actually think in Judaism, I mean, they just plain flat out say, hey, we don't believe the guy. We think he's a fake. So for me, I'm kind of like, you know, I don't really appreciate that. Yes?
Why do you think Islam is growing, is typically growing faster or spreading more than Christianity or other religions? Is it strictly from population growth in the countries that it originates out of, just the people there having more babies, those babies are, or is it from apostolizing or what?
Yeah, it's the food. We talked about this last time. It's a really good question to try and understand what's going on because I think it probably exposes us a little bit. But I do think that the religion is a very aesthetically pleasing religion. It's very attractive, believe it or not. Maybe you wouldn't think so, but again, even Mediterranean, you know, sometimes we look at a Mediterranean design of architecture and we think that that's beautiful. Like, imagine a whole country that looks like that. It's very beautiful. It's very beautiful. I think that the growth of the faith originally, against all odds, I think is very appealing to people. The other area that we talked about that I think we're just getting killed in is evangelism. I think they're willing to evangelize more. I think they are unashamed in their evangelism, and they take their evangelism very seriously. They also evangelize a lot in prison. They do a lot of prison, a ton of prison ministry. So I think that it's a combination of multiple things that's happening, and we're just getting beat. I also think that we're a small population, because if you look at it just by population numbers, we're not getting beat. You know, Christians are the majority, period. But when you look at the Lord's church, that's clearly not the case, right? So... But I think that there's a few areas where we're maybe getting hit from a few different sides, and they're doing a good job, which is why we need to, I think, step up and evangelize. It's a good question. Yes? No worries. Yeah, we discussed that in the first lesson, and that's online if you want to listen to it. And it was a series of evidences. I studied for about a year, every day, often. I'm kind of one of those all or nothing kind of people. So when I get an itch, I need to scratch it. So I tried to figure out as much as I could as soon as I could, and I think that some of the things that hit home with me the most were there's a lot of evidence for being able to reproduce manuscripts. So it seemed like it's not inconceivable that the Bible would actually be, that the Bible that we read today is actually what was said then. So that to me was really important. I think the fact that it was written over 16 centuries by so many different people and yet it had harmony, I think was really unique, because the Quran was over a span of 23 years and, you know, it just doesn't have that. No writing has that. So I think that was unique. I do believe that the system of salvation, like I have a problem with that in Islam. There's a couple areas in Islam where I can't reconcile a couple things. So in Christianity, the path to salvation is laid out, I think, very plainly, and I think it makes good sense. Like I think it's logically laid out really well. The apostles and their willingness to die on behalf of preaching the gospel. So I can only come to the conclusion that they must have seen Jesus raised from the dead. And if Jesus is raised from the dead, like that's you can show me anything else you want in the Bible. And you can point at anything and you can try and poke holes in anything. If a guy came, preached, died on a cross and rose from the dead and then ascended to heaven, like I said this a couple weeks ago, I just have a general policy that when people rise from the dead, I listen to them. So I think that it was a culmination of all those things. And at some point I think the last thing that I did was have to, and this is awful, but I say this too, the best thing about Christianity are other Christians, and the worst thing about Christianity are other Christians. I had to get over the fact that I was going to have to sit in a church building with maybe people that had treated me poorly before and reconcile those things. That took me a few months, but once I was able to get over that, then yeah, it was like the evidence was just overwhelming. Good question. Was it Wendell? Do you have a question? I think my father was just really disappointed, and I don't think that there was a whole lot of rebuttal of, hey, you know, this is wrong, here's the reasons why it's wrong. I think he was really disappointed, and he said that sending me to that school was the worst thing, the biggest mistake he's ever made in his life. So that, you know, that was kind of the tone of the conversation. So there wasn't really like a, hey, let's sit down and figure this thing out. It was just very personal. So, you know, that was that. But again, I think that over time, he realized that, like, I'm not what he thought I was going to be. I thought you were going to be like these guys. And in fact, the more that I read the Bible and the more I understand about the Bible, the more I look at all of these things. And we talk about it. We talk about how people abuse Christianity and how they don't live the right way. And that's actually a place of real common, like significant common ground between the two of us. Because he'll say, son, you know, why, like premillennialism, you know, why do Christians believe this, this, and that? And I'm like, dad, That's not what the Bible teaches. We'll talk about things in the Old Testament like that. That's not what the Bible teaches. Well, you know, a guy at work said this, this, and this, and I'm like, show him this verse and ask him to explain that. So I think over time, it's actually become a place of some common ground. But, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question. And I hope I'm understanding the question the right way, but I actually think that there are less barriers to entry to becoming a Muslim. So I think it's easier. I think it's easier for them to convert people because they don't have, like, hey, you must be baptized. They don't have, hey, you have to go to the, like, going to the mosque is optional. You can pray, you can do your prayer at home. You can do it at the right time, on a prayer rug facing Mecca. So there's actually, I don't like the word barriers to entry, but for the sake of answering the question, there are less barriers to entry, if you like, to Islam. Really, all you have to do is confess or profess that there is only one God and Muhammad is his prophet. And if you believe that, and you're willing to profess that and believe that and live according to the teachings of the Quran, that's it. You're in there. Sure.
It's kind of radical. Do they actually believe a person who commits suicide by bombing or by explosions about the 50 versions and all that?
Yeah, sometimes it's 50, sometimes it's 72, sometimes it's 99, and I can't keep up with it. it's hadith. It's not Quran. It's the hadith. It's the daily teachings of Muhammad. So it's not inspired. But yeah, I mean he that's definitely taught in the hadith, and have some use that to their gain for sure. Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sure that every time they say the word Muhammad, they're supposed to say peace be upon him. Like, they have a great reverence. That's their prophet. They have a great reverence and respect for Muhammad. So if it's in his, you know, biography, then yeah, I mean, they, you know, there are some that believe it. Now, is that the prevailing view? No. definitely not. It's just, again, it's one of those things that's a cool hashtag to put out there and make everybody think that this is popular. So, yes. I mean, that...
By Christian standards, we're looking at the Bible.
Yeah.
We can look at the person and say, oh, he's a good man because of the Bible.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable in answering whether anybody is a good person, to be honest. But, I mean, there are definitely things that he did that were reprehensible. You know, but I have to say that there are things that I've done in my life that are reprehensible. So, I mean, I...
The Muslims see that as
right.
Just, oh, well, this is, you know, we did this bad thing, so it's okay, you know.
Yeah, I see where you're going. It's a good question. So, and the way that I'm kind of understanding it is that, like, how, as a follower of Islam, and you're looking at this person and you revere them, and they do, but he was clearly inadequate as a human being, and how do you reconcile that? I'm not sure. I think... Simply put, the reconciliation is that he's a man and God is God. And I think that they just draw the line there and let it be what it is. He is simply the messenger. But I think that that's also an area of great uniqueness for us, is that we have Jesus who came and dwelt among us. And, you know, even... I guess one thing that I've kind of said, too, in argumentation against... some of the ideas of Islam and their beliefs about Jesus and his divinity. You know, it's like, even if he's not God, like, do you not find it very, very interesting that like his miraculous birth that you believe in, that he was blameless? The Quran uses the word Zakiyah, blameless. Like, do you not find that very compelling? I mean, that's pretty compelling. So there's nobody else like that. So even if you know, which we would never concede that he's not God, but even if we left that aside, so not making concession, but just leaving it on the table over here for a second, what about the rest of this? Like, explain that away. And they might just say, well, yeah, that's why we believe he's the highest regarded prophet. And in one way, it's like, that's frustrating because you're close. But in another way, you're close. You're certainly closer than the friends in the Old Testament. Edward and then Joe.
But David did reprehensible things.
Right.
So, you use the argument, well, was Muhammad perfect? No.
Definitely not. No.
No. We believe the things that David had written, yes.
Yeah. No, yeah, well, the question was he good?
Yeah.
So they're definitely not, none of us are perfect, but yeah. Joe?
Well, it was very similar to what Edward said. They would acknowledge that Christ was sinless. Is there anyone else in Islam that they would acknowledge was sinless?
Yeah, and I don't know, this is also kind of this is kind of where people can wordsmith things. I don't know if they would say sinless, or if they would just use the word blameless, and then look at Abraham and say, well, he was blameless, you know, and it's or Job, or, you know, and, you know, righteous, blameless, sinless, they might draw the line there. But what the way that it appears to me anyway is that blameless implies sinless. Now, even if they wanted to argue against that, I mean, there's still other areas that are miraculous and that are difficult to explain. So let's just say he's blameless for the sake of argument. Again, let's leave sinless on the table over here with, you know, deity. and let's just say, okay, well, what about miraculous birth? So again, you're going to have to deal with that, and you can't give a comparison to that. He's the only one. You're going to have to deal with the miracles that he did. Well, the apostles did some things, so on and so forth. Yeah, but they didn't do all the things that Jesus did. So you're gonna have to deal with that too. I think there's multiple things that you have to deal with. Some of the evidences that we've already explained and that we already know as well. There are lots of evidences in the Bible that you'd have to somehow explain away. But then again, in particular about Jesus, it's like it's an area that's so weird. Because again, we're so close. And yet we're so far, but we're so close, but we're so far. So that push-pull, where does it leave you at the end of the day? It leaves them probably where they are and us where we are. But when we reach out and we try and bridge the gap, it's not that big of a gap. I really don't think so. I know that sounds weird because we think, oh, Muslim, like it'd be impossible to convert a Muslim. I would think it's impossible to convert a Jew. They think he's a fake. Like, how do you deal with that? You know, at least with the Muslim, you can agree on the most important person in the faith, Christ, on several things. In the Hebrew faith, it's like you have to find other, and there are other ways, and you have to use those other ways to try and get there. But those are my thoughts on that. Good. Yes.
I was just thinking that to me it sounds like some denominations that just pick a man and his teachings that they're following to establish their belief.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a lot like
there's denominations that do that.
It's a lot like Mormonism.
Yes.
I mean, it's very similar. Now, of course, they would reject any similarity from the standpoint. They would just say that Mormonism copied Islam because it's way, way, way old. Islam is way older than Mormonism, and that's a fair point. But then you might just say, well, you copied Judaism and Christianity. And they might say, I mean, again, they would just explain that away and say, well, we are similar. We, you know, you guys got it wrong. So we just, you know, Muhammad came to correct a few things. So, I mean, there's lots of loopholes to be able to climb in and out of things. I think that if you spend a lot of time there, that's where you'll stay. Ultimately, I think you have to establish similarities. And then once you establish similarities, you got to talk about the things that I think matter. I think that the plan of salvation is a big one. I don't even think you have to go directly to Christ and his deity. I think that's going to be a tough sell. I think if you're trying to convert a Muslim by trying to convince them that Jesus is God, like, and that's one of your first few things that you do, I don't think it's going to happen. And I'm standing here as a preacher telling you that, like, that had no effect on me at all. I was not willing to have that discussion. I needed evidence to get me to a point where it just seemed like it was overwhelming. Now I have to consider whether he is God or not, and then I was willing to study that. But looking at something, you know, like the plan of salvation, that's difficult. I think, anyway, if you're practicing intellectual honesty as a Muslim, I think that's difficult to contend with when you compare it to the path that's laid out all the way from the beginning, all the way through the New Testament. I think that that's an area to approach. Yeah, good point. What else? All right. Thank you.